Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday morning. It is the 31st, the last day of August 2020, 13 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. We welcome you to the proceedings and to our roundtable panel. Let me introduce the panel to you. And before I do that, a quick reminder that you always can join in on the conversation. All that we ask that you do is email us. And the email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we'd love to hear what is on your mind in regards to the stories that we'll be discussing and the things that are happening in our world. panel@wamc.org. Let me introduce the group. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm good, Joe. Very good. Very good. Yes.
Excellent. I like very good. That's good. We'll take that this morning. We also go to Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association. Good morning, Judy. How are you?
I am fine, but a little cold. I want summer back.
Yeah, it was a little up our way, Judy. A little nippy this morning. Yeah.
A little.
Yeah. It's.
I was outside. It was 46 degrees. That was cold.
That's nippy. Yeah. Yeah. But well, it's that time. August is over.
August 31st.
That's right. Now, we also welcome our dear friend, political consultant, Libby Post. Good morning, Libby. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm just ducky. How are you?
I'm fine. Good to have you here. We also welcome Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPI and Director of the RPI-IBM Artificial Intelligence Research Collaboration. Jim Henler is here. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
I'm not sure I'm ducky, but I'm doing okay.
Okay. Well,
every time he comes on and you introduce him, I always forget to go out and buy Tetherball.
Tetherball.
Yeah. Well,
it's a big pole with like a.
Yeah. That's tethered, and he's tetherless.
Untethered is what some people call.
Yes, untethered.
But he reminds me of Tetherball every time.
Details.
Is that another bald guy joke?
Let us get to the, let me moving us along this morning. Let us get to the topics of the day. And again, we remind you, panel@wamc.org, we'd love to hear from you. A fatal shooting during a night of political conflict in Portland, Oregon, has yet again escalated tensions in the city and further inflamed the issues of crime, protest, and race that President Trump is trying to make a focus of presidential politics. A man affiliated with a right-wing group was shot and killed on Saturday as a large group of supporters of President Trump traveled in a caravan through downtown Portland, which has seen nightly protests for the past 3 months. The pro-Trump rally drew hundreds of trucks full of supporters into the city. At times, Trump supporters and counter-protesters clashed on the streets, with people shooting paintball guns from the beds of pickup trucks and protesters throwing objects back at them. Coming on the heels of the fatal shooting of two protesters and the wounding of a third in Kenosha, Wisconsin, Tuesday night, the incident was an ominous sign amid an escalation of weaponry and of rhetoric as protests of police violence and presidential politics merge. Chad Wolf, the acting secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, on Sunday left open the potential to surge federal law enforcement to quell unrest in Portland. During an interview on ABC's This Week, Mr. Wolf said, quote, all options continue to be on the table, end quote, to deploy more federal troops to Portland despite the strong opposition of local leaders who say such tactical teams have only heightened tension in the protests. President Trump appeared to respond live on Twitter to the mayor's remarks, who said the shooting left his heart heavy and he denounced violence, but he pointed to the combative and unyielding rhetoric of President Trump as a generator of the nation's escalating polarization and violence. The mayor said, we need to reset. The president needs to reset. I need to reset. Mr. Trump responded on Twitter saying that Mr. Wheeler is wacky and called him a dummy. He would like to blame me and the federal government for going in, but he hasn't seen anything yet, Mr. Trump wrote. There's much more to this story, and a lot we don't know about the story, too. The man who was shot and killed was wearing a hat with the insignia of Patriot Prayer, a far right-wing group based in Portland, area that has clashed with protesters in the past. Joey Gibson, the head of the group, said Sunday he could not share many details, but could confirm that the man was a good friend and a supporter of Patriot Prayer. And so that is still being investigated, and we're not exactly sure what happened, but we do know that a man was shot and killed during those clashes in Portland on Saturday. Alan, let's begin with you, and then we'll go around the room.
Let's try to remember, everybody, that the main thing driving so much of this is Donald Trump's sense of what will get him reelected. And the one thing he's got left now, he hasn't got the economy, that's gone. You know, he hasn't got so much that he thought he had. But the one thing he thinks he has is that Americans want to stay safe. And if they can't be safe, I remember, well, never mind. I just remember my PhD time when my advisor kept telling me, they're going to get you, they're going to get you, they're going to get you. And it all went well, so she got me. You know, I think this, well, she didn't really, but I think that's really what is going on here. You know, these people don't just show up unassisted or uncommunicated mm-hmm. with. They show up because they are either being told to show up by somebody, or they know what that somebody wants, that somebody being Trump. In the meantime, he's playing all the other cards he has. He's got his health people going down the wrong path. He wants to open up the society in such a way that he can be reelected because the economy will be coming back. It's all directed in one place, and that's reelection.
Judy Patrick.
You know, I've been checking the Oregonian website. That's the local paper up there in Portland that gives you some real facts about what's happening, and the facts matter in this case. So what they're calling this was a pro-Trump rally with 600 vehicles. If I was a reporter or if I was someone who worked for the national government and was concerned about Russian interference in our election, I would try to be figuring out who organized this 600-vehicle
exactly.
caravan. And it's a major thing. And let's not forget that Kellyanne Conway, I think today's her last day at work for the president, but last week she was quoted as saying the more chaos, the better for Trump's reelection campaign. This Trump's support for vigilante justice is pretty clear at this point. You know, I was prepared to give him the benefit of the doubt, but it is clear that the idea of having suppressing opposition is one of the major campaign strategy at this point. But if you go to the Oregonian website, you'll see that they are taking steps in the state of Oregon and in the city of Portland to bring down the level of violence. Things were quiet last night. The governor has a plan to address this. But when you have people outside the city organizing caravans of pickup trucks I saw the photos, people sitting in the back with guns. I mean, they are trying to suppress, you know, free speech. It's a crazy time to be an American, and I think that our better angels need to step forward at this point.
Meanwhile, I want to get to both Libby and Jim, but we should probably add the story of the Wisconsin governor, Tony Evers, who's calling on the president not to visit on Tuesday. The president has said that he will come to Kenosha, Wisconsin, and the governor says that they are not going to they don't need him. They don't need the president. And so they're asking for the president not to come in because, as Judy just mentioned, they feel they have the situation now under control and they don't want it to become out of control. So they're asking for the president to reconsider his planned trip. And he said that the presence will only, quote, hinder our healing. And the president, again on Sunday night, said that he had no plans to not go to Kenosha, Wisconsin. Jim Henler, go ahead.
You know, I wish I knew what to say. The the whole way this plays on the right wing, you know, Fox and to the right media is just unbelievable. You know, it gives you parody. It takes the Kenosha case and suddenly turns it into, well, it's just tit for tat. You see Trump. I mean, Twitter's reached the point where they have to take down some of Trump's retweets on this stuff because he's retweeting crazy conspiracy theories. It's just, you know, hatred works for him. And the scary part is, you know, Biden, Democratic convention, you know, was we're all in this together. Let's work together. It was a very positive message. The RNC went with what I can only say was, you know, four nights of hate and let's make things worse. And Trump's getting a bounce and Biden isn't. Hate is working. And the thing we need is to get lots of people out there for nonviolent, you know, the kind of protest we had in Troy, nonviolent, multiracial, multi-age, really is something we just need to see a lot more of, calm and quiet protest that really says, look, the people understand and we care. Because if it becomes this kind of, quote, warfare, unquote, which are, I mean, these are two small isolated cases, but they're getting all the national news. And that works for Trump. He's breeding hate, and hate will elect Republicans.
And not only hate, and not only hate, but fear.
Fear. Yes, fear.
That's what he thinks is going to work for him.
Libby. And it worked for Bush.
Yeah, it did. Libby?
Well, you know, there are four basic emotions: love, hate, fear, and hope. And, you know, we saw the Democratic convention that Biden is running on love and hope and change and all those good things. And, yes, it is fear and hate. And you know, there's a part of me that just wants everybody to stay home, right? There's a part of me that thinks that who knows who really shot this guy who was a Trumper. Who knows? You know, these people are yahoos with their guns, and we have no idea, and we probably will never find out who actually shot this guy. But we know who shot the two people in Kenosha. And he was raised to do what he did. Both of his parents are right wing, you know, the militia types. And his mother brought him there, and he was raised to do this. And you know, that's part of the problem here, is that hate has been so ingrained in our collective consciousness now about who we are as a nation, that people think it's okay and that it's the right thing to do. I mean, you know, there was an article in the Times, I think, that I posted as one of my required readings on Facebook about how violence is becoming the political discourse. And it's not just people being shot, but you go to these demonstrations and folks on the right are constantly feeling okay to act out and punch people and push people and be violent towards people. And I don't think look, there are going to be people on the far left who are also going to act like that. But I think there are far more of them on the right than there are on the left. The people that we work with, the people that we see at our demonstrations, like the one that happened in Troy, are basically peaceful and do not want to resort to violence. We saw here in Albany that the violence that did take place during the Black Lives Matter demonstration was instigated by a white guy who had ties to the white premier organization, you know, the white supremacist organization. So there's been plenty of media coverage about how that's been all instigated as well. So, but there is a part of me that just wants to tell everybody to stay home. And there's a part of me that thought Joe Biden missed the opportunity. He should have gone to Kenosha last week. He could have been the Robert Kennedy in Indianapolis when Martin Luther King was shot. And it was a missed opportunity.
Why do you think he didn't go?
I think everybody's a little afraid. I think he didn't want to get attacked by Trump for trying to intervene. I think that they also, I saw a story about how they sort of underestimated the voting population's response to the violence in Kenosha, and they thought it would die down and people would, you know, pivot back to coronavirus and the other things that are going on, unemployment, but they're not. And when, and I do think that, you know, Trump is stoking these fires so that he'll get reelected. I mean, this weekend I felt more depressed about our prospects than ever before, and I know I have to get out of my head. But I think that there's a, that the Biden campaign miscalculated, unfortunately.
I agree with you. I felt very much that this was going in a bad direction, and we have what, 66 more days of this? This is going to be awful.
Yeah.
Just horrible.
Yeah.
Alan?
Yeah, you know, the first thing that came to my mind, I'm not so sure it's justified, is that Bobby Kennedy is dead. And he was dead because a nut got him. You know, I think Biden is cautious. He's older, he's cautious, and, you know, it is probable that he really didn't want to be accused himself of having inflamed the rhetoric. But he didn't have to worry about that. Look, Biden is now about to embark, because he knows he has to, on an anti-Trump surge, in which he is going to say, look, this guy is really bad news. He's causing all of these problems, and we are a lot unsafer because of him, because he's the president, than we would be otherwise. And everybody knows it's true. Now, whether they want to act, whether that everybody wants to act on that knowledge, another whole story.
All right, going to pause you there. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll have letters and much more. Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Libby Post, and Jim Hendler. Before we go back to our discussion and to letters, I just want to touch on something that Jim mentioned in passing about Twitter and taking down one of the president's tweets. This was not about the violence that is happening in either Portland or Wisconsin, but was instead about coronavirus statistics from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. There was a user by the name of Mel Q, who is a member of the QAnon conspiracy theory group, a supporter of that group. And the post claimed that the CDC quietly updated the COVID number to show a small fraction of all deaths, 6%, from the coronavirus were actually a result of COVID-19, the disease caused by the novel coronavirus. The vast majority of deaths, the post claimed, were because of other serious illnesses. The president retweeted that yesterday. Then the tweet was taken down, and if you go to that tweet, it will say, there's a message from Twitter that says this is no longer available because it violated the Twitter rules. Jim, I'm going to tap into your knowledge on this subject of how that happens, of how they decide to do this tweet as opposed to all of the other where there may be misinformation. And also, at that point, isn't the damage already done?
So, two answers to that. First of all, there were earlier tweets taken down. It wasn't on this particular violence. It was actually a lot of the Minnesota stuff. But so Twitter has specific policies that they put in place, as do most of the social media companies. In fact, Zuckerberg gave a big apology about some of the Kenosha stuff the other day, what they had done, what they hadn't done, what they should have done.
Basically about Facebook. Allowing militias
about Facebook.
Yes, yeah. Facebook of putting up the... of helping what Judy was talking about, of organizing the groups to come in, right?
Right, and also the the group that the Kenosha shooter belonged to had a page that they said really should have been, you know, was violating some of their anti-violence rules. But anyway, so the companies have to set these fairly careful rules, because you always have the important difference between free speech and control.
Right.
What they've decided is that when it comes to medical information, things that are provably wrong need to be suppressed on any side. So some of the anti-vax stuff has also been taken down, but so has, you know, some people who are overinflating things to push it the other direction. The COVID stuff is scary. We all know that. And, you know, people are getting used to it. You know, I don't know if you want to go off in that direction, Joe. Let's keep it on the media stuff. But essentially, you know, what Trump has been doing for a long time is retweeting very horrible tweets, letting people either take them down. Sometimes his own people remove them. Sometimes, in this case, Twitter remove them. And, you know, he gets away with it because, as you said, 2 million people have got his tweet before it's gone.
Which is hard to take back. And, of course, then there is still the news cycle that goes on about the actual taking down of the tweet. Let's go to some letters and go to Bob, who says, Libby is right in saying that it's time for peaceful protesters to find another way to demand racial justice other than mass protests. Far-right and white extremist counter-protesters are going to keep disrupting demonstrations and causing violence and property damage. Boycotts and registration drives are better alternatives. We go to...
Well, think about that for a moment. I mean, there are lots of ways to think about it. One of them is that it would be better if everybody stayed home. And you wouldn't have the violence. On the other hand, if everybody stayed home, you wouldn't have any protest. And that is exactly what Trump wants right now. So let's say Trump does something really bad, like, try to influence the election, or say we have to postpone the election, or all that stuff. You mean to say that under the plan that everybody should stay home, nobody would go to the streets? Go ahead, Libby. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not saying that if something like that happened, we would have to take to the streets and it would turn violent because of how heightened all the tensions are. There's no two ways about that. All I'm saying is that right now, you know, I'm not saying don't protest. I'm saying let's protest smart, like the writer did. You know, protests can come in many forms. Voter registration drives is a really good way of doing it. There's all kinds of different ways I think that we can come up with. We're very creative to show what we want to show to organize and to get people engaged. My problem is, my thing is that we go out on the streets without guns, by and large. We don't do that.
So did Gandhi.
So they go back out on the streets in response to us with guns. You know, and it's a scary thing. And
but that's what they want.
At Trump's feet, I know that that's what they want. They want to kill us. I know.
They do not want you to go on the street. They don't want you, and they're going to send somebody. Set those massive, as you pointed out, those massive numbers of trucks. Somebody organized all of that. I just wonder who that could have been. I mean, they don't want you there, and that's the problem. You know, Gandhi knew it. That's the protests that were inspired by him. People died, and they knew people were going to die, but it was what it took.
John Lewis at the bridge.
Yep.
Yeah. Right.
Right. In the meantime, while we're talking about the political consequences of the and who shot who, it's discredited legitimate protests. Whatever happened to discussion of police reforms such as no-knock warrants or transparency or ban on chokeholds? I mean, nobody's talking about those things anymore. And in that respect, the president has been very successful in catering to police unions that didn't like the idea of these kinds of controls being put in place.
I want to go ahead. Were you going to say something, Libby?
No, Nope.
Okay. So let's go back to the letters. Gerard says, what about the all the attacks by far-right white supremacists on people? They have killed far more people. What about the rise in hate crime since Trump has become president? Let's bring this to the forefront. Keith,
that letter is right on the money. And that is exactly what Biden is about to do. Because if he doesn't emphasize, right, Jim? If he doesn't emphasize for a second, over and over again, that this is Trump's presidency. This chaos is happening under Trump's regime. Not letting them format the discussion by saying these Democrats are responsible for it. No, Trump is running the country right now.
That's right. So Biden's most successful.
Go ahead, Libby. Libby, you first, and then Jim.
There should be an ad with the American Carnage quote from his inaugural speech, and then showing all the carnage that has happened since that time, and just lay it all on his feet, that this is his fault, and this ad has to play over and over and over again, because you're absolutely right. This is his in the making.
His legacy, if you will.
We need to show that.
Jim?
Yeah, one of Biden's most successful tweets of late was one where he said, this is Trump's America. Are you feeling safer in various forms? But, you know, that message has to be brought home. It can't just be this occasional thing. There does need to be his positive message about creating jobs and things like that. I think that is very important to show that he has an agenda. But at the same time, he has to be counter-messaging, and it's going to be a hard thing to do both, but they must.
Let's go to more letters, and we go to this one from Keith, who says, the guy running on law and order for re-election as president is needing to win, so he stays out of prison for all of his crimes that he and his family have done. This man will do anything to stay out of prison and remain as president. There is no bottom. He doesn't care about any lives shattered or lost. John says, I have to wonder how the media, especially Fox News, would change its reporting if people knew just how very, very white Portland is. I wonder if Trump would still be using the word thugs if he knew. But it doesn't matter, right, Alan? It's the perception.
Well, perception is everything. I have to say, Roselle and I don't know, Roselle always knows where to go, but we traveled to Portland last year. And it is a wonderful, beautiful city. And we have a lot of friends there. You know, it is extraordinary to see the chaos that is occurring there.
It certainly is. Absolutely. Let's go to, let's see, I know I have one more. I don't know one person who is paying attention anymore to the protests. They become a parody of themselves, says Matt. It is time for them to stop and actually do something. Let the Trumpers cause all the trouble. Is all the protests are doing now is feeding into the stereotypes that they are trying to change. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue and talk more about this and other topics. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Libby Post, and Jim Henler on the program this morning. Going back to letters real quick, we go to Tom, who says, when Mr. Biden states he decided to run for president this time because President Trump stated there were very fine people on both sides, this is a provable lie that he has repeated it many, many times, even in his acceptance speech. I argued this is stoking the racial tension just as much as anything President Trump actually says. Again, that very fine people statement Mr. Biden uses is a hoax and can be proven as a lie. I have trouble following the logic of that. Anyone want to help me?
So the argument. I'm sorry.
Okay, go ahead, Jim.
No, you, Jim.
Yeah, so the argument is that if you look at the whole context of the quote, you will see that that's not what Trump was saying. On the other hand, if you actually look at the whole context of the quote, I don't buy it. I mean, when you look at it, Trump does one of his normal, goes this way, goes that way, but in the end says they were fine people. I mean, the exact words came out of his mouth, and in the context he said them, he was saying, in terms of what's going on there, there are good people on both sides. So it's awfully hard to believe that you can call that one a lie.
But if you say that if a person says this is what led me to want to run, and then you say, well, no, it isn't, we can prove that. I don't understand that logic. I mean, if they said that's what, I mean, maybe it wasn't, but that's what, you take it as what they say, right? That's what I was having trouble with.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Libby?
I can't add anything more.
Have you given up? Don't give up.
No, I haven't given up. I just, the fact that he said they're very fine people on both sides, during that particular incident. I mean, he has taken that and given...
Is that a baby or a cat?
that's the cat.
Okay, all right.
That's the cat. Not to worry. We don't have any babies here.
All right, just checking.
But, the fact that he says there's very fine people on both sides...
I'm telling QAnon.
Right, that's right. It says to the world, it says to QAnon, it says to the radical Christian right, it says to these extremists, you're welcome at the White House. Come on in. You're the people we want to see.
I've got the quote. So the reporter asks, he says, Mr. President, are you putting what you're calling the alt-left and white supremacists on the same moral plane? And the president responded, I'm not putting anybody on a moral plane. What I'm saying is this. You had a group on one side and you had a group on the other, and they came at each other with clubs, and it was vicious and it was horrible, and it was a horrible thing to watch. But there is another side. There was a group on this side. You can call them the left. You can call them you just called them left. That came violently attacking the other group. So you can say what you want, but that's the way it is.
No, it's the guy in the car that came violently attacking the peaceful demonstrators. I mean, that's the thing. He sees things the way he wants to see them, regardless of reality, because it suits him. He will interpret things to suit himself, regardless of the damage it does to the country.
Let's go to this letter from Mike, who says, I'd like to see candidate Biden and others echo the words and passion of the mayor of Portland. I was moved by his scathing rhetoric. We go to Luigi, who says, will more voters blame Trump for the violence rather than see him as the fixer? He's in charge now. Why do his supporters think he can fix it after he is elected? Jeff says, remember, attacking Trump directly didn't help Hillary at all. A failed strategy for sure. And we got this from Denise, who says, Alan is wrong to equate Gandhi's protest with the current situation in America. Gandhi was facing down a foreign occupier whose violent responses united the Indian people. In America, it's citizen versus citizen, and that could tear this country apart if it continues.
To which I say, Bushu, let me tell you right now, everything is always different. You can say this pink is different than blue and all the rest of it. But what we have here is a president who is leading this country into a fascistic state. Now, you can say that's not an outside force. It's an inside force. Well, I'm sticking with what I said. Too bad.
All right.
So I just want to say you quoted only part of the quote because it went on to say, excuse me, so the reporter said the neo-Nazis started this.
We're back
thing.
On
they
that.
Showed
okay,
up in Charlottesville, and Trump responded, excuse me, they didn't put themselves down as neo-Nazis, and you had some very bad people in that group, but you also had people that were very fine people on both sides. You had people in that group that were there to protest the taking down of, to them, a very important statue and the renaming of a park from Robert E. Lee to another name. So, I'm sorry. I don't see any way you can say that didn't include the words. You had both the fine people on both sides. So anyway, sorry.
Yes. Yeah, and the support of keeping Confederate statues up and routing and praising the Confederacy, which is a slap in the face to every African American, maybe except the head of HUD at the moment, but Ben Carson. But it's a slap in the face to every thinking African American in this country.
And a slap in the face to every Northerner who's. And a slap in the face to every person, because it was a fight for the American people.
Right, every thinking person.
The qualifier, yes, Alan.
Joe, didn't you make a rule in the beginning of the thing that people should hold down their letters to one per person? Or maybe one or two, not 11 or 12 or 15.
Okay.
I just thought I'd mention that.
I don't. I only see the ones that have been greenlit. So I don't. I think you're seeing the raw feed. So yes, but we will remind people of that. So here's a letter, a one-timer, I believe. I'm an everyday faithful listener. It really bothers me that today I can hear the depression and desperation in your voices now that the protests and riots are not working for the Democrats anymore. There was rioting, looting, and violence way before the Trump supporters started getting there. There's a systemic problem with these protests and riots. They need to stop. The whole country sees this. You're wrong in blaming the Trump supporters and Republicans.
If he says
that, what do you mean? Media a little bit for this.
Now I hear the depression and desperation in our voices.
I want to go back to my other word. Bushu.
Yep.
Bushu. What does that mean?
it's a word you can say that, as opposed to a word you can't say.
It's a BS word fully.
That doesn't violate FCC standards.
Exactly.
Yes.
Go ahead, Jim.
I was just going to say, you know, I do think that part of the problem is after a while, peaceful protests stop getting covered. So I think you said that right. Yeah. But also, you know, if you actually look at a lot of what's really made change in the original civil rights movements and things like that, it is that the protests moved to other things. It moved to the bus boycott. It moved to the sit-ins. Right. And, you know, we need to find ways to do some of those things. But of course, that's easy to say. And time is short. So, you know, I think the issue, but I don't think the issue can be put aside. I think whatever the letter writer says, these protests were working. There have been huge changes in many places. There was an awareness that wasn't there before. Our state and many other states have changed longstanding laws based in part by the realization that the people who voted cared. And so we must keep emphasizing that voters care about this way we can.
I think we also need to keep emphasizing, and I'm not taking the panel to task for this, but, you know, our conversation has gotten into the political, but, you know, a person died. I mean, that's what's so scary about this is somebody died. Libby?
And let's not forget that 1,000 people every day are dying of
COVID.
Coronavirus.
Right.
COVID,
yes, absolutely.
Yeah, right. And two people died. I mean, you know, two people died in Kenosha. One person died in Portland. The right is making so much more out of the one person in Portland because it was one of theirs, right?
Yep.
And then they are raising hundreds of thousands of dollars on GoFundMe, which thankfully has been taken down, to support the kid who did the shooting, to pay for his legal fees.
He's become
because
a right-wing
it's okay
hero.
To shoot.
Yeah.
Right, right. He's become a right-wing hero, and it's okay to shoot people on the left. It's okay to shoot Democrats. It's okay to shoot people of color. It's okay to shoot Jews. It's okay to shoot the other. And we are all totally in the other while they see themselves as Americans.
Well, this was one of the issues with the governor of Wisconsin not wanting the president to come in. The president and the White House, I guess it was the White House spokesperson, was asked if the president would be meeting with the family of Mr. Blake, who was shot. And they said, we don't know, those plans are still fluid or something. We assume that's not going to be the case. It's going to be, right? I mean, that's the concern, is that it's going to be more to, I believe the president even said, in one of his tweets yesterday, that it was to support the great patriots who were present in Wisconsin.
Yeah. He supports them. He does not support anyone else who doesn't support him. It's just
that an important swing state, which he won by a few thousands of votes.
Right.
That's right. Right.
Yeah, by 1%.
Right. He's not the president of the United States of America. He's the president of the Confederacy and what that has come to mean in the 21st century.
Alan?
Joe, I wanted to go back to a much earlier letter.
All right. If I need you on mic, but...
Oh, yes, you do.
Yeah.
Right. Oh,
right now, it sounds like you're being smothered by a pillow. Okay.
Here it is now. Yeah. Yeah, well, it's true. I'll explain it to you later. But in any case...
All right.
Somebody help him!
Wow.
Step away.
No, it has
the pillow in there. Bushu would have had a whole other meaning.
It has. It has to do with when I want to eat a tangerine. I put the microphone under the pillow, to hopefully, and then I forget to take the microphone out. Anyway, this was a. I must disagree
with
Alan.
To muffle the tangerine.
No, muffle the microphone.
Okay.
I must disagree with Alan. Remember, attacking Trump directly didn't help Hillary at all. A failed strategy for all. Wait, for sure. No. Look, Jeff from New Falls.
Right.
Let's try to remember that Biden is not Hillary. As I have said many times, a lot of people loved Hillary, but a lot of people really didn't like her. I don't think that's true of Biden. I don't see a lot of people saying, I don't like Biden. I don't think he's a good person. So therefore, I think Biden goes into this as a moderate with a lot more people on his side so that when he attacks Trump, it's going to be a different thing.
All right. Hey, we have time for a break. It's tangerine time, ladies and gentlemen, please.
I get it, Joe, and I apologize.
No, that's fine. Eat them if you got them. We'll be back with more of this conversation right after news with Rick Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Libby Post, and Jim Henler. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. I want to go to just a few more letters and then we'll move on to some other topics. Other big things making news, of course. The Black Lives Matter protests are so important to gain justice, says Bell. There can be no law and order without justice. Maybe it's time for protesters to stand silently with fists raised and holding signs. It's shameful to attack a still silent crowd. Denise says, who are we supposed to fear? In other words, what are we unsafe from? I'm not afraid of Black Lives Matter or those protesters. Are you? I'm afraid of Trump and his supporters. Interesting perspective there. We go to Frank, who says, why did you leave this off the fine people quote, you lying liars? And I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and white nationalists because they should be condemned totally. That from Frank in New Jersey, calling us to taking us to task. We go to Teru, who says, 6 months ago, I received a huge mailing asking me to give money to Trump's Army Rise Up. It was terrifying, and I was going to send it to you, but instead I sent it to the Vermont attorney and never heard it back. You're wonderful, and yes, I'm terrified. We go to David, who says, this is the chaos president. All he does is create chaos where he thrives. We who oppose him must remain focused on the election, contribute an hour of your time a day to campaign phone banks, register voters, put out yard signs, and donate money to Democratic candidates. Focus action wins over chaos. We go to Chris, who writes, for contemporary protesters, Gandhi and King's political strategies could provide some valuable lessons. The peaceful resistance that the two pursued was more effective in exposing hard truths about injustices. You know, in Portland, the Wall of Moms was joined by Veterans for Peace as the Wall of Vets, and they have now opened chapters in cities across the country. There are leaders. Now people get out and must commit to expose racism and violence by contrast, not competition. And this letter,
you know, Joe. Ted Wheeler, the mayor of Portland, is now doing exactly what Joe Biden should be doing, and I think is going to do today. Denounced Trump as a perpetrator of violence. I mean, you know, you say that enough times, and people will get it. Right now, it's not being said.
Dolly says there will always be dangerous people like Trump trying to gain power, but the bigger problem is the right didn't follow their oath and they broke down the system meant to protect us. I'm unsettled by the hate and primitive thought process I thought we'd left behind through education and evolution. Like Trump, some would rather hear a lie than the difficult truth. And that was from Dolly. And from Kyle, there needs to be reform in how potential police officers get hired. This Kenosha shooter was only a year away from being able to join the force. Imagine that same hate and mind frame being behind a badge. There's also a video out there of him repeatedly punching a girl from behind. I don't know anything about that. I've not heard or seen that. So,
Joe, can I?
Yes.
Just mention real quick. I just tweeted, and people can find it by searching on the WAMC Roundtable hashtag, and hopefully it'll get retweeted, the exact transcript of Trump's interview. If you can find that we're lying, and if you can find the quote that that letter writer mentioned in that transcript, then we are wrong. But read it yourself. The
okay.
exact words, they're there.
All right, we go to another story. I would like to talk about, we mentioned a little bit about Biden on the violence and what has been said so far. Joe Biden has accused Trump of recklessly encouraging violence in response to the Portland shooting. The presidential candidate and former vice president said, "We must not become a country at war with ourselves. But this is America that President Trump, this is the America that President Trump wants us to be, the America he believes we are. All of us are less safe because Donald Trump can't do the job of the American president." His response came after Trump denounced Black Lives Matter protesters as agitators and thugs on Sunday, calling for a federal crackdown on demonstrations in cities such as Washington and Portland, where a man died after tensions between pro-Trump and liberal groups burst into violence. Starting before 6 a.m., Trump let loose a barrage of nearly 90 tweets and retweets, touting his chances for re-election, attacking Democratic state and local officials over ongoing protests, and defending aggressive actions by his supporters in Portland, who appeared to be firing paintballs and pepper spray at people from pickup trucks as they drove through city streets on Saturday night. So what more should Joe Biden be doing then? And especially, which brings us to the other issue of Biden actively campaigning. The president has long portrayed the vice president as, quote unquote, hiding in his basement for the last several months. And now the Biden campaign says that he will. They originally said he was going to come out after Labor Day, but now will be coming out, I believe, and speaking this week. But the events are going to be very different than what Trump is doing, which is basically the same rallies that he's always done, without masks, without social distancing, and, you know, to the hell with any of that. Libby?
I think that Joe has to get out there in some way and hold events that are responsible, but he has to be seen as dynamic. And not play into Trump's rhetoric about him. I mean, we all know the rhetoric is wrong, but the people who are undecided here need to see a dynamic leader.
I couldn't agree more.
He needs to do.
It's just a question.
I mean, you know, do the thing at the airport. You know, and they'll set up the coordinate. You know, they'll do the Disney thing where you have to stay 6 feet apart. You know, and everybody has to wear a mask. I mean, I think the picture of Biden at an event with everybody wearing a mask juxtaposed to the president using the White House as a political backdrop with no one wearing a mask will speak volumes, because pictures are worth a thousand words.
Well, Libby, I think you're right about one thing here, and that is he has to show energy. because what Trump has tried to do is to portray him as, quote, Sleepy Joe. And there will be people, a lot of people, who buy it, who think he's afraid to come out of the basement, who think that he's not got the energy that he needs to move around and to assure people that he could do the job as president. So he's got to show energy, period.
Yeah. I agree with that. And I think he also has to get Kamala out there doing much the same thing. That's, you know, the weapon in the quiver for an awful lot of the voting public. And he's
You're right, but here's the problem with that. If Kamala does all of the work, that may reinforce the Sleepy Joe image. So,
they both have to do it. Yeah, yeah.
That's
right. I definitely agree.
That's the answer.
Both. Absolutely.
That's the answer. They got to be both, and they've got. But you can't muzzle Kamala. That's a mistake because she's a major weapon. And what you have to do is increase the energy level on your side of the equation.
So, but I think Biden needs to go on the offense. What Trump has successfully done is set the stage. He set the narrative, and the narrative is law and order. Biden needs to be much more aggressive and be and hold Trump accountable for the problems that are going on in the cities and with the racial strife. But the other issue here is something that a lot of Americans care about as well, and that's this virus. And Trump has successfully pushed that off the front page, and that is a very good campaign issue for Biden. When Biden talks, he tends to be boring. I mean, let's be frank. He is not a dynamic speaker. He needs to up his energy level when he talks and be a little less stilted when he talks. And that's one of the things that people like about Trump is, even though he meanders and it's hard, he doesn't talk in full sentences, people think he's real for whatever it's worth. But Biden needs to be a far more dynamic speaker if he's going to get this message across. And again, he needs to stop being defensive and he needs to be on the offense.
Hmm.
Yeah, I remember him in the Obama campaigns, and he was electrifying. He was great. He fed off the crowd. He really was a great campaigner. You know, yes, it's 12 years later, but he needs to dig deep and find that energy again.
Don't you think I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to ask. I mean, he seemed to have it in his speech on the final night of the convention.
Yep.
I think he has it. I think part of it is that, you know, we're all hearing Trump over and over and over again. I think he's got it. And I also think you don't blow it all at the end of August. This is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And you lead up. I mean, you know, I've done plenty of campaigns where people are like, we have to do this now. We have to do this now. There are certain things that he has to do now. He has to build his base. He has to get out there. But we have to remember, the election is in November, and it's about building the momentum, because you know what? Trump could end up peaking before Election Day, and Joe will peak on Election Day. It happens a lot. It happens more than you think.
Well, and unfortunately, I think the COVID figures will favor Joe. I just don't want to see that happen. You know, I look at our predictions. We were predicting 179,000 fatalities by August 31st. I'd like to claim victory, unfortunately, on that one. Our new model says by end of September, you're looking at 227,000 at the current policies. If you move to the policy that Trump's new advisor recommends, the herd immunity policy, you're looking at 1 million deaths by Election Day. I would like not to have that be what puts Biden in the White House.
Now, media has something to do with this. I turned on at very early hour this morning, CNN, and I'm hearing, with a smile on the face of the anchor, that things are getting better, that the numbers are going down. Well, there's still tens of thousands of people dying, but not quite as many. So I think when you put that message out there, you're helping Trump.
When you put out the message that things are getting better.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's a tough thing. I mean, I've been wondering about this, Alan. You bring up a great point, because even Governor Cuomo has been talking about how there's the narrative of when the governor spoke yesterday, he talked about the tests, of how many tests. They did a record number of tests in this country. They talked about how the number of hospitalizations and deaths were down to levels before March. All of that is really good news. But you still have the other stories, which are that colleges are being shut down for 2 weeks because over 100 kids have tested positive. You still have kids going back to grade school starting this week or next, depending on where you live, or have already gone if they're in the South. So I don't know. I think it's still, people are still fearful of that, aren't they? I mean, it's great that less people are getting sick and those numbers are bad in comparison, but we still have nationwide roughly 1,000 people a day dying.
But we do know that every time you get an anchor going on and saying things are getting better, but when you look at what's getting better, thousands less are getting infected every day, but still a lot of people are getting infected. There's no question, every time you say that, it feeds on itself, right?
Yeah.
Now the people are going out in the streets and saying, okay, it's over, when it certainly is not. I'm sorry, Bill.
No, you're right. And the problem is, it's people saying it's over and going out on the streets that are going to push it back up again. Mm-hmm. That's what our I hate being the data guy when the data is this depressing. But when he says things are getting better, that means the number of people dying per day is going down.
Exactly.
From 2,000 to 1,000. I don't claim victory on 1,000. You know, one of the things I'd like to see in the ads is Trump saying, if we keep it to 100,000, it'll be a victory. Well, okay, we're going to 200,000 now. Watch his victory. Where's his victory? And again, you know, if we had masked, if we had done what the data and the scientists were saying, we'd have kept it under that 100,000. I'm sorry, you can hear the emotion in my voice. The turning COVID into a political issue killed hundreds of thousands of Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just, again, it's the disease that's killing us, but it's the craziness in how the disease was turned into a political issue. You know, as Alan says, all he cares about is getting reelected. This is one where, I mean, look at our state. Our state really made things better because we took it seriously. If our whole country had taken it seriously, you wouldn't be seeing numbers like we're seeing now. But people saying, oh, it's only a couple hundred thousand, that's not so bad. I mean, you know, we're approaching numbers that are going to be, that by the end of this calendar year, are going to be more Americans than died in World War II. I mean, we turned what could have been a victory. You know, we used these war metaphors, and then we turned it into a political issue. And we blew it. And I can only put that, you know, absolutely in the administration's purview. I mean, they had people saying the right things and they ignored them. Sorry.
No, don't be sorry for it at all.
I'm just sitting here looking at today's numbers, and, you know, you can look at what trends you want. All the trends go down over time, because all trends go down over time when you have a large population. But the numbers don't get good. They just get, instead of a million, you're going to have 700,000. Okay, that's a good number.
Think of that. One person dies, it leads the news. Somebody gets hit by a truck, leads the news. Now you're talking about tens of thousands of people, and the numbers are going down. And say, whew, that's good. Baloney.
Mm-hmm.
You're still talking about thousands of people dying every day.
The numbers aren't going to go down. I mean, that's the thing. Look, we just had to close SUNY Oneonta for 2 weeks because the kids were doing their thing and they're afraid of a spread. Down at Crimson Pot, I guess it's the University of Alabama, they have thousands of cases of COVID. So, you know, the numbers are sort of plateauing, but they're going to go back up. And this administration threw out the Obama-Biden playbook on how to deal with pandemics. We have to remember, Ebola came into this country.
two people die. Two people die. And we're at almost 200 people have died because of COVID, because this guy thought it was just going to go away. It's going to disappear, poof. And it hasn't.
What makes you think, what makes you so sure?
It's going to keep increasing.
What makes you so sure he thought it was going to go away? He said he was going to, he thought it was going to, no. Libby, I'm just for the fun of it, let's talk about that for a second.
What he says and what he thinks are two different things, right?
Yes.
Right.
Let's say that.
Yeah, no, what they thought, and this is borne out in a memo that was done by Jared Kushner and unleashed or unearthed by the press, was that they figured it was just going to be in populist blue states, so we don't have to do anything about it.
The latest numbers are 180,000, according to the tracking by the Washington Post. We are seeing that the number of cases reported in the United States is approaching a new milestone, on track to exceed 6 million in the next few days. The rolling average for new daily cases did trend slightly downward nationwide over the past week, and hospitalizations did fall by 9%. But the country is still consistently reporting more than 40,000 new infections per day, nearly double the number reported daily in May and June, which was considered the height. And states across the Midwest and the South continue to report spikes. So that's what you get into. That's where you go to what Jim was talking about of the data and it being very concerning.
And don't forget that every number is a person. It's
right.
A grandfather,
exactly.
A grandmother, a healthcare provider, you know, a little kid, someone who contributed to the computer community, someone who was loved. And the other thing is that not everybody's dying, but a lot of people are having long-term health consequences with this. And we don't know what will happen to the people who are getting COVID now and surviving, what's going to happen to them in a year or two. So there's so much that's not known about this illness. We still need to treat it so seriously. And it is a travesty. It's despicable that we aren't treating it seriously.
But let's not forget, this the Orange Menace, this man said, well, if we have less tests, we'll have less cases. And we do know that testing is not as robust in some places as it is in others. And so we don't know if there are more cases because the testing isn't being done.
Well, the testing isn't being done. And then the other story to come out is that regarding the FDA and the pressure that the president has put, or the administration has put, on the FDA over COVID-19 treatment. It was... So this was the tweet. President Trump's accusatory tweet barreled in at 7:49 a.m. a week ago Saturday. The deep state at the Food and Drug Administration was trying to sandbag his election prospects by slowing progress on coronavirus treatments and vaccines until after November 3rd. Shocked and upset, FDA Commissioner Stephen Hahn, who was tagged in the tweet, immediately began calling his contacts at the White House to find out why the president was angry. During his conversations, he mentioned the FDA was on the verge of granting emergency authorization to convalescent plasma as a treatment for COVID-19. The agency planned to issue a news release. The White House would upend those plans, turning a preliminary finding of modest efficiency into something much bigger, a presidential announcement of a major therapeutic breakthrough on the China virus, quote unquote, as the White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany previewed in a tweet late that Saturday night. At a news conference on the eve of the Republican National Convention, Trump lauded an emergency authorization for convalescent plasma as a very historic breakthrough. Hahn, who had rushed back to Washington from a family home in Colorado, was initially restrained but then doubled down on Trump's talking points. He said 35 of 100 people with COVID-19 would have been saved because of the administration of plasma, a gross overstatement denounced by scientists and public health experts. The misrepresentations became a stunning debacle for the FDA, shaking its professional staff to the core and undermining its credibility as it approaches one of the most important and fraught decisions in its history amid a divisive presidential election, deciding when a coronavirus vaccine is safe and effective. Yet again, the president has harnessed the machinery of government to advance his political agenda, with potentially corrosive effects on public trust in government, scientists' handling of the pandemic. So Han then apologizes the next day for misspeaking, saying on Twitter, the criticism is entirely justified. Meanwhile, demoralized employees felt he had allowed the agency to become a prop in the president's campaign. So, I mean, that's not going to get better, right? I mean,
no,
over the next several weeks as we battle this pandemic. And
so you comply or you get fired. It's that simple.
Well, and Fauci was replaced more or less on the president's team by Scott Atlas. Atlas from the Hoover Institution is an advocate of what's called the Swedish model, the herd immunity model, which did not work well in Sweden, and which again would lead to almost a million deaths in the U.S. by the end of the year, according to the data. And this is, you know, and now that's who he has giving his briefings. There was just an article in the Post this morning, Washington Post this morning, about, you know, the concern that the public health officials across the country are having with this new. So new Trump pandemic advisor pushes controversial herd immunity strategy. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's, you know, he'll listen to anyone who says things he think will sound good. He's hoping the numbers will stay under control till November, or people will just not be caring because they'll get used to it. The media will start, you know, again, the media reports these things, and
we have to.
Who listens?
We have to take a break. We will do that, and we'll return for our last go-round here on the panel right after this. Last call and questions for the panel as we have our last go-round this morning. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Libby Post, and Jim Hendler on the program this morning. Let's go to some letters like this one from Lynn, who says the only reason Trump wants to go to Kenosha is to get some footage for his advertising, the warrior strutting through the war zone, now quieted in his presence. Brian says, from the data I see, testing is being suppressed. Just look at the data. Florida testing down by 50%, Texas down by 30%. Just what Trump wanted. Why is this not being reported? Jim, you have a handle on the numbers?
I'm sorry, Joe, you broke up there for a minute, so I couldn't hear what
I'm saying. They were talking about Texas and Florida and those numbers being suppressed, and I just asked, you know, I know you have a handle on the numbers. Yep. I mean, are you seeing that as well? Is that a concern?
Well, you know, we're basing our numbers on what we see reported, and you know, that obviously is a problem when you have testing, when you have intermittent reports, when some of the states are reporting nursing home deaths as COVID, others don't. You know, it's a jumble, and we do our best to clean up the data and get things on as clean a path as we can. But it's definitely the case that you do have states which are trying to look better. And, you know, some of the states where you wouldn't expect the biggest jump, so like Illinois, for example, has pretty good reporting, and therefore we're able to predict the scariest numbers there if you move to sort of the herd immunity kind of model, whereas it's much harder in some of the other states where you don't have as serious testing going on. I think as schools start to reopen, I think as colleges reopen, we're seeing an increase in testing in that demographic, which is helping also. But, you know, again, doesn't matter what you look at, all the numbers are bad if you stop controlling it.
Right.
New York's great proof. The masks have become prevalent in New York. We've all gotten used to it, and we show the best numbers in the country right now in the predictions. Right. If you just keep the status quo. Right. A lot of places. And that's with schools reopening. That's with things going on. But keeping it under the numbers we're doing now, keeping the regimes, you know, we're a state that got hit hard at the beginning and learned our lesson and followed rules. And unfortunately, it will probably take our whole country doing that before we're going to see this play out.
But we hear from the listener, the letter, that nobody's talking about it. I always wonder where anybody heard about it. But without my being tricky, tell us where we can tell us where we could find out about the testing. So, in other words, somebody must have said it for somebody to write in and say, how come we're not hearing about it? Because he had
well,
to hear
I
about
think
it from somewhere.
They were looking at the numbers, the raw data and the numbers, and said that they saw that there was a 50% and 30% decline in Florida and Texas. So if those numbers aren't there, then how there is a question as to why. And going to Jim's earlier point, right, about the testing not being reported. So, but to your question, Alan, and direct this to Jim, you know, where do you get? I know Johns Hopkins. I know Washington Post has tracking. Of course, this is what you're doing, Jim. So, I mean, where do you get numbers? If you're not testing, you're not going to get the numbers, right?
Right. Well, so you're getting the numbers reported by individual counties being rolled up by states. We get all sorts of numbers. You know, it's not hard to find the numbers. As you say, there's a lot of repositories. If you go to idea.rpi.edu, you can get to our page where we'll show you how to get out to hundreds of different places that report these numbers. You know, but I think what the letter writer points out is that you can see these numbers going down. You can find it for yourself if you go searching. That's very different, Alan, than it making the news. People reporting that some of this better looking numbers do it. You know, we on MSNBC, you'll see one set of statistics, and on Fox, you'll see another. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's part of why we look at the real numbers and not what's
being reported. Yeah, but not to beat the horse.
But it's,
But not to beat the horse. Let's make sure that, because we see this all the time. Somebody says, how come nobody's talking about? And then, and why is it ever never in the news? And then, of course, it is in the, it has been in the news. That's where somebody got it from. So I just want to caution everybody. First of all, I wanted, Jim, to ask you where you could find it, and that you've answered. But in other cases, there's an overgeneralization, and that people are, quote, it's never being reported, it's not in the news, and that's not always so.
Alan, no, that's true.
Alan says, you're speaking to the choir. What do we do if Trump is in for another 12 years, which is what the quote-unquote deplorables are chanting?
Oh, boy. I mean, there are an awful lot of people talking about this.
We're all sounding depressed today.
Awful lot of people talking about this. I understand bookings are up in Ireland and in other places, so... You know, Canada, a lot of people are talking about leaving. I sure hope it doesn't come to that.
Hey, this is our country. This is something we need to stand up for. None of us are throwing in the towel, and I think, you know, the scare tactics, oh, maybe he won't leave office. I think it's a Pollyannish view, but you have to have faith in the country, and it is our country. The idea of escaping to Canada or Ireland, the privileged white people might be able to do this, but this is our country, and we need to do what we need to do to preserve democracy.
Okay, so what do you do? Let's assume he wins. Then what do you do, Judy? You make a very good point. What do you do?
I think people have effectively used the court system to a varying degree of success in controlling what he does. But in the first instance, you get out the vote. Whatever people, I guess this is the true test of what America's character is, who they elect as the next president. And if America decides its character is Donald Trump, then we need to do a better job of telling people the important virtues of good character rather than deplorable character.
Well, no, you're right. But the moment, the discussion of the moment was what happens if he wins or if he prevails, because wins is. And then also what happens if one is convinced that there wasn't a fair election, which is certainly possible with this guy if you're repressing the vote and everything else.
Hey, that argument goes both ways, though, because he's saying the same thing if Biden wins. So I think at some point you have to accept the results of an election.
Yes, but on the other hand, would you rather believe a Biden or would you believe a Biden or, you know, Al Gore or any of those people who play by the rules as opposed to somebody who doesn't play by the rules?
Right. Well, I've played games with people who don't like. I play Candyland with my nephew or with my grandson who does not play by the rules, and he tends to win. But if I stuck to my guns and made him play by the rules, I occasionally would win as well.
And I was talking to somebody the other day who made it clear that there were people in Hitler Germany who got out, and there were people who didn't get out. That I've heard that argument more than once, but I certainly think you're right. It is our country, and we do have to stay and fight. But it is we do see a guy who many people think is not above tampering with the election. We already see him do this with turnout and the rest, so it could be nasty. A
couple of letters before we go ahead, Libby.
It's going to be nasty, not good.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It's going to be a long 2 months. We go to Venkat, who says...
I think
it's
going to be longer than that.
Yeah, I agree. I was wishful thinking, but yeah, a new chapter after...
It's going to be long until January 22nd, yeah.
Venkat writes and says that peaceful protests work only if the oppressor can feel shame. Remember that South Africa did not turn a corner till there was an economic embargo. Nothing can shame the minority rulers in South Africa. The British, on the other hand, had pride and were ashamed of the people being shot at during peaceful protests in India. We quickly go to Regina, who says words matter, and giving the right-wing gun-toting crowd legitimacy by referring to them as militias is wrong. Credit Trevor Noah for calling them what they are, gangs. If they weren't white, they would be arrested and thrown in jail, and sadly, they will defend Rittenhouse, who is the young man charged with the two shootings and killings in Wisconsin. We'll pause there. Well, actually, one more letter. I just returned from the South. Trump country, make no mistake, writes Teresa. He has succeeded in creating a real division by fear-mongering and stoking racial tensions. His followers believe everything he says with cult-like enthusiasm. Caution from Joe Biden and Democratic Party is not working. Unless a strong counter-argument for a return to sanity is presented, I fear re-election is on the horizon and our country is in truly in jeopardy. So glad to return to hearing you all. It gives me hope. We will end there. My thanks to everybody for being a part of the program this morning. Alan, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks also to Judy Patrick and Libby Post and Jim Henler. Thanks to all of you. We'll be back next with the Congressional Corner right after this.